Welcome to Building My Legacy Podcast. This podcast is designed for leaders and entrepreneurs who want to leave a legacy and will provide strategies that focus upon key elements for legacy creation, determining your desired impact and its benefit, increasing your legacy's reach by engaging key stakeholders, planning, prioritizing, and executing. Here's your host, Dr. Lois Sonstegard.
Welcome, everybody, to today's Building My Legacy podcast. I have with me today Tom French. Tom French is going to be, you're going to get to know him a little bit because we're going to do a series with him on supply chain. He is one of the thought leaders in supply chain right now. And facing our companies today, the three top issues of the three top issues that companies are facing, supply chain is one of them. So it is one of the critical issues for us to address. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time with Tom picking his brain and delving into why supply chain, how do we deal with it in a more responsible way? But to get started, let me tell you a little bit about Tom. Tom is a supply chain coach. He's been doing that since 2005. He has a passion for teaching and training people, giving actually to people the knowledge that he has so it can be passed on and others can do what it is that he does. And he does this with an incredible attention to increase profitability and efficiency. He has worked with several companies, many companies. One of those is Hub Group, Inc., where he was responsible for the logistics operations. He delivered over 48% of the total logistics revenue for the company. He provided on-time delivery 98% of the time. Remarkable. And he generated annual revenue run rate of $65 million. And that is only the beginning. What's interesting also about Tom is he has been recognized as a real thought leader. People are bypassing some of the big experts like MIT, Harvard, to come to Tom because he really understands increased productivity, increased profitability and efficiency. So Tom, that's the beginning. I want you to tell the audience how you got into this, because did you just wake up one morning and say, okay, supply chain, that's going to be it for me? How did you get into this?
Thank you, Lois, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, I am dedicated to coaching people how to do this. So it's a long history of getting started. I basically started a company that was in heat shrinkable products in the aerospace industry. And from there, I realized we built a building across from Tesla Motors in Fremont, and I was running out of space. So I looked for a 3PL, and I found one in the Fremont area.
Would you mind defining for our audience 3PL? Because if somebody isn't in supply chain, they may not know what that is. So what is 3PL?
A third-party logistics company. That means that they run a warehouse and they house multiple companies to help them supply their products in the supply chain. So it's multiple companies in a warehouse that pays that party to run their operation for them. And that's when I couldn't find a 3PL, I finally found a trucking company called Salada Transportation, and he had a small warehouse. So when we got bought out, our company got bought out, when that closed down, I went to him and said, I'd like to buy your company, because I believe that there's a real need for 3PLs that can give local inventory for companies who they're doing business with in a local basis. And when we did, we started at 16,000, and in 3 years, we were 1 million square feet.
Wow.
We wrote our own WMS, so we were doing kind of wave picking way early. Wave picking is consolidating all the orders and trying to process them individually. I managed the transportation as well because Salada was still involved. He was a partner. And we did delivery of all our customers internally to their customers. So we're able to do it at a lower cost than they could outsource it for. Not only that, but I look for value added. So we were doing mostly chemicals, Monsanto, Dow Chemical. And the chemical companies came to me and said, how can we reduce our cost? And I had a rail siding. So I said, ship in by rail siding. So we'll offload it from a rail car. We'll pump it into a pack out and we'll pack out in bags and super sacks and Gaylords so that your customer gets the packaging they want real time. And that became a winner for mostly Dow and Monsanto and Ashland Oil.
Okay, so those are big companies. And one of the things, Tom, that you've talked about recently also is looking at how things have begun to shift. And you've talked about Amazon, Target, Walmart, kind of shifting how we are looking at e-commerce and the fulfillment, in that they're bringing the product in so the manufacturer owns the costs rather than the platform itself. So that's a little bit different than what you just talked about. So right. talk about that shift and why that's also an important shift.
Yeah, so when we look at supply chain, transportation's two-thirds that cost to serve. Usually distribution's about a third of that cost. So warehousing and processing is about a third. When we start looking at e-commerce occurring, it shifted. That happened around 2013-14. And I wanted to do transportation because it was the sweetest spot to trim out costs to deliver to improve profits for each of the companies. In 2013, I'm looking at what's going on with e-commerce, primarily packages coming to my doorstep that my wife was ordering. And I'm, there's a whole new need out there. So then I started looking at warehouse management software because I figured we needed to be able to manage in a transportation software and then optimize into a warehouse management software. So I started looking for companies that could do this well. And at Hub Group, the reason I joined them was because they had i2 technology. So it was technology that managed transportation primarily. And we were able to trim cost out for a lot of Fortune 500 companies. Ingersoll Rand is one. And we continue when we're able to reduce their costs. And over year, which is really what people have to do. When I left Hub Group, that's when I started Supply Chain Coach, trying to coach companies and primarily looking for transportation. I, too, couldn't do a lot of the things I needed for Snap-on Tools. I did Snap-on Tools at Hub Group. So I was looking for a technology. There was a four-year-old company called Mercurygate. They were IBM programmers. When I talked to them, I went, wow, they have a lot of skills. So I said, here is my issue. When you optimize last mile delivery, which is what Amazon's doing, and they were able to write the software to do that well. So I've implemented quite a few companies with Mercurygate to primarily what we call mode shift. So when you look at transportation, there are like basically five or six modes. One is small pack. You get it in an envelope or a small box. The next is on a pallet, less than truckload. And then when you start filling that truckload to like a half truckload or full truckload, all of those shifts cause lower cost. So in a small pack, you might be paying 43 to 63 cents a pound. You get it to a LTL, you're paying 21 to 30 cents a pound. You get it to a half truckload, then you got 16 cents a pound. You get it into a full truckload, you got 8 cents a pound. Then if you put it on the rail, you go down to 5 or 4 cents a pound. So those shifts and learning how to combine shipments is really what starts to drive costs down and profits up. So that's what companies need to look at.
Tom, it's so logical. And, you know, when you present it that way and you look at the cost saving, it's incredible. I mean, why would you do it any differently? Well, the reason is you don't have a process that will consolidate your shipment perhaps sufficiently to be able to really get the cost savings. So do you bring companies together to facilitate this? Or how do you do that, especially in a small growing company that may not be at this point of truckloads or railroad cars?
Well, that's an interesting question because you're right. What it's difficult for a small company to do this and do this well. So when you look at who's regional, if a lot of this is being managed by brokers, if you will, these are people who go to trucking companies and try and get them to do deliveries. So when you look at Mercurygate, did a lot of work with brokers who had a lot of customers. They were trying to optimize across those customers to reduce mode. Now, many of them struggled with it because it's very difficult to get companies to process orders on time to be able to do it because you have multiple pickups and you got multiple deliveries. So currently I'm working on an investment company that is moving all the technology up to their investment level and all their manufacturers are underneath it. Now being able to optimize, it's really a great process, makes it a lot easier to do because you can process then all the way from raw materials to inbound from vendors, and you can optimize across all the manufacturing companies to make that lower cost. And then when you bring it into the warehouse, you can optimize how you put it away correctly. So velocity of SKUs is very important in that respect. It's like a puzzle that you got to look at and you got to kind of step out of the silo and look in the cloud and say, if I could put all this together, how would it work?
If you put it all together, how do you work? And then, but before that comes, who do I put it together with so I can make it work, right?
Right.
And the interesting thing is that for this company, it's the venture capital that's done it because they have to have efficiency in order to be able to sell it and make their money off of what they're creating, correct?
Well, it even gets deeper than that. So as an investment company, they're looking to buy. So when you look at buying a company and bringing it into the fold of companies you're buying, how well do they fit within that mold? So usually companies have sales data and purchasing data. So you have to start with getting data and analyze that data to figure out how does it process within what we're doing currently today. It makes your decision for buying much easier.
Okay, so I want to get into that a little bit because you talk about you have the six step plan or process that you take companies through that allows them to optimize things. But I just want to go back to your example that you were just speaking about first. And that is that you have companies that have come together that are optimizing their supply chain, their trucking, their inventory system, their fulfillment, their delivery. All of that is being optimized at a top level. Somebody's organizing it for all of them. And in this case, it's the venture capital company, correct?
Correct.
And from what you've seen, what has that done to profitability and to efficiency? Do you have data on that yet, or is that forthcoming?
Yeah, it's still kind of forthcoming. I mean, we've did transportation management software first because it's a sweet spot. Right at the current, we're about to implement a warehouse management software. And then we're looking at two distribution centers, one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast, to manage all of the shipments through those for all the companies or partners they have. When you look at most companies and you do the analysis of sales data, you're going to find that 80% of the profit comes from roughly 20 to 30% of all the items they're handling. So you only want to move the high moving items to East Coast, West Coast. And you want to also look at the optimization of customers. Who are the customers that are 80% of your profits? And what do they buy in terms of 80% of the product or 10% of the product or the last 10% of the product? And how much of that? And how do we service them best? That's the that's where everybody should go. It's really difficult for companies to get there.
Okay, so let me ask you something else about that before we get into your six-step plan. For those of you who are listening, we will probably spend each one day per step or about that. We may do pick up a little bit in speed, but I really want to get through it because this is such an important issue and I want to give time to it so you can really speak well to it. But one of the things that I'm seeing right now, Tom, is there's so much uncertainty, flux in the market. What was popular today may not be popular tomorrow. So are you able to make those kinds of adjustments? Because when you speak about velocity and moving the 20% that is really moving through efficiently, how do you adjust for that? So you're current, you're up to the moment in terms of how the customer is shifting.
And yes, so every product has a sine wave curve. So it starts off at the bottom, you're just starting the product, and it's the sales start to build. It reaches a peak, and then it goes downhill. So you're absolutely correct. So each product that you put on top of that continues to build your sales. So you've got to look at how do we continually create new products, and then how do we manage when they're upswing and when they're on the downswing. So most of that is managed within either the ERP, Enterprise System for Accounting, or in the WMS, Warehouse Management Software. Either one of those can measure them. Then you need to reset your warehouse probably every quarter. Okay. Most people don't set it maybe once a year, maybe once every 4 years. And that's the issue because their products are all over the warehouse.
So once a quarter, that's a lot of energy. I mean, just having had a manufacturing company, just doing month end inventory to check, then your quarterly and your year end, that was, you had to put time aside for it so it could actually get done, right? So there's an investment a company must make in that, but clearly there's a savings that comes from that investment. I mean, we saw it, you made better decisions because you knew exactly what you had. But in a very large company, that's a lot of people or systems that you have to put in place.
Well, so there are BI tools today that will allow you to automate the process of bringing in sales order information and allow you to manage it very quickly. So we're seeing a lot of that occurring today. It's Internet of Things, right? And when they have that, then it's how do we manage all of that, including doing audits. So if you are running a cycle count on a daily basis, generally your accountant will not care if you run an annual audit or not, because your inventory is usually pretty accurate. Again, remember, it's only 20% of the items that you really have to be concerned about how well you're doing with them. You don't ever want to be out of them because that's what's creating your product. So once they go down, then you got to start moving them out of the way for new products, but making sure you don't get caught with them in the end and they don't move at all. Because most people don't clean out their warehouses well. And if they do this process, they will learn that those items, if you break it up into four categories, A, B, C, and D. D is what you really got to think about. Should we just get rid of scrap, sell as a discount, discontinue? Those are the things most companies don't do well.
It's a hard one to do. It's always hard to let go of your children, right?
It's
and
true.
Products become your children as you work. So let's talk about step one, gathering data.
Yeah. So when you gather data, you want to gather data on a spreadsheet if you can. You can use spreadsheets. Most people do to start. And you want to be able to include everything in the sales data, including transportation costs. Because again, you got to know what did it take for me to deliver that product to the customer. And then you want to also extract purchase order data. So how well did we bring in products that do that? And then how well is it all automated? Is it automated or is it not automated? So the automation of all of that within software is important. So how do you integrate from your accounting package, your ERP, to your warehouse management software and to your transportation management software? Now, in the investment company, the automation goes from the order taking accounting package, ERP, into warehouse management. So it can then make sure all of the item information, because you have to have dimensions, you have to have weight to figure out how you ship. And then it goes into transportation software. On the purchasing side, you would take it from ERP accounting into the transportation, and you would let the transportation work with the vendors, the transportation software work with vendors, because they may be able to ship everything or they back order some things. And you need to know that when you receive it. So when you receive it, you know you can process it properly. So those integrations are extremely important.
You know, it's there's a lot of processes. We tend to think of things as being, once you make a decision of how you're going to approach it, things are will be perfectly executed. But you're right about those back orders. Those are killers, right? Because it changes your numbers and your process in terms of how you're thinking about it.
Yeah, a lot of companies are trying to eliminate back orders. They'll cancel them. They'll put them on a new order because that's the issue they've got. Now, there's still people processing back orders, and it's okay as long as you have a system that can manage it well. If you don't have a system that manages it well, then it becomes an issue, especially when you look at the A products, the fast-moving, the 20%. Those products, you never want to be out of stock. So if all of a sudden your vendor is down and you're not going to be able to service your best customers, that's why you find a lot of people in supply chain have multiple vendors for a particular raw material or product.
Got
and that's so they can switch from one to the other.
Got it. And boy, we've seen that in today's world, haven't we? Today, somebody has something and tomorrow they don't.
Correct. And, you know, we with COVID, it all changed really drastically. More people stayed home. E-commerce went out of sight. Most manufacturers don't manage e-commerce at all. Very difficult for them to do. But if they thought about it, they could do it when before they package, and they could fill it out from manufacturing if they set it up correctly. But most people don't do that.
Most people don't. And it's because it's a process, and it becomes a burdensome process to some extent. Although we did it both ways when we were working with Amazon, and we tried both. And you're absolutely right. You make much more money when you fulfill it yourself and you control it, but you also control the customer. And when Amazon fulfills, you no longer know who the customer is. So your ability to follow up, your ability to communicate, to share new products, you can't do it.
That's correct. Part of this investment company I'm working with today, they have one of their divisions, one of the companies they bought, who has actually gone out to all the retailers and Amazon and said, list our products, keep one or two in the store, and we'll fill all your orders for all your customers. Extremely smart. I've never seen another company do that to this date, but it should be the trend that's going on, because your sales outlet basically are the Macy's, the Kohl's, all those retailers, Amazon, the largest company in the world. So you want all your products on there and you want them to sell it. You want to embrace that. Their web services is the best there is. But if you fulfill it, then you're controlling your destiny. You're correct.
Yeah. So I want to go back to the gathering data, because if, let's say you're a small growing entrepreneurial company and you've got inventory, you've got to ship, you've got to do all of this that we've just talked about, because that's where your growth is going to, you've got to be selling product to grow, right?
Right.
Where do they begin? You can't put all the systems in place at first. Where do they begin? Where's the data that you must have collected right from the beginning so you can move into the next step?
Yeah, and when you think about a startup particularly supplying either to business or business to consumer, which is e-commerce, they're going to first think about, why will that customer buy my product? And they got to concentrate on the marketing and sales of that. Oftentimes, the back end, the warehousing, is an afterthought. Oh, and by the way, now we got to worry about this because we haven't. So it's like anything. If you don't have the roadmap, if you and I were going to drive from California to Hell, Michigan, and we didn't look at a map, we might get there. But if we plan our trip, we definitely will get there. And that's what most companies don't do well.
You know, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking back to my own MBA experience, for example. And you learn about marketing. You learn about finance. You don't learn about good cash management, but you do learn about finance. You learn about organizational processes. You do learn about supply decision making, so decision science. But you really don't learn a process or how to include supply chain into your decision-making tree.
Correct. It's sad because that should be part of business intelligence. As we go through college, I would think that would be extremely important for anybody who wanted to be an entrepreneur to understand that it encompasses everything. And if you don't think about how you're going to do that, then you definitely will probably not make it. And a lot of people, and I know you've owned your own manufacturing, but a lot of people don't plan even their money correctly. And they grow so fast, they grow out of business. They can't continue to finance it. Because once they're upside down, nobody's going to give them money to do it. So if you do it up front, that all gets solved in the very beginning. So when you start to think about that, you got to think about, what are the things we need in order to do this and make sure we're doing it correct?
So one of the advantages that the example that you gave with the investor-owned group of companies is that because they have this umbrella that's over them, that thinking can be done for the companies as right. They're growing into what they need to do. So in a sense, this collaboration that the venture capital has created, has made part of the life of all of these companies, has created the possibility. therefore, there's the money, there's the talent, there's the people, because most people couldn't hire you to do that in a startup phase and to do this. So it's brilliant. It just says to me the importance of how do we work with others? We can't solve these problems sufficiently by ourselves. It's bigger, especially if you're in that early stage. But I think that's maybe true at the bigger stage too.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's going on. So they'll go out and look at a company. They have to be profitable to buy, but it's a manufacturing or somebody who markets, but maybe has shipments from China. It doesn't make any difference where it comes from. But if they don't have the technology to do this all the way through, they've already got it established. Now they just need to migrate them to what they're doing. So the movement all the way down through their ERP to their WMS, warehouse management system, to their transportation system exists at the enterprise level and is utilized at the manufacturing level. It's a genius way to do it.
It's a genius way to do it. We're not taught or trained how to do that because we're taught to compete, Tom. We're not taught how to work together. And yet you see that in other places. Like I saw that in to some extent in Japan growing up. People actually brought systems together. You know, the whole JIT really is in part of that thought process, isn't it?
It is. And the Japanese actually created a lot of things that we should be looking at and how we manage products within our own facilities. There's Kanbans, there's all kinds of things. Because when you look at manufacturing, can you bring all the parts together to assemble within 2 to 3 days? I saw that in refrigeration units for grocery stores. They could build a refrigeration unit in 2 days from start.
Wow.
But all of those products load into the assembly at the time that they need it. And so there was no delays, and they wouldn't start a manufacturing process unless they had all the raw materials on site. So those are the things that are really important. A lot of people don't look at it that way.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking also going past manufacturing into even things like healthcare, because there too, we compete. We don't look at how we can bring systems together that others are doing to make this our process more efficient, more productive, more affordable.
One is great comment, because if you go back 3 years in the medical business, there was no way if you had three different providers for all that information to be in one spot. Today, that's changed. When you look at my charts, we have that information and we can bring it in because it's in the cloud, like most softwares. So all of this is stuff that each company needs to look at and say, how do we manage this better for the client? Those are extremely important to plan way ahead.
It is so important, isn't it? And so gathering the data, knowing what kind of data we need, knowing it right from the beginning. It's almost like, Tom, we need to put together a little checklist for people. If you're starting a business and it includes product or services, make sure you have this prepared so you're ready down the road. Maybe we'll think about that as a next thing to offer people.
Well, so, and oftentimes it's cost that keeps people from doing it.
Yeah.
Because when you start off, if you don't have enough raised capital, and you're going to start with a less sophisticated software because it's less costly. And I see a lot of that occurring. But what should you really invest in to make sure you're getting it the way you need to? The first thing is obviously sales, right? So as a company, you want to be able to have as many outlets in sales as possible, especially if it's B2C. B2B is a completely different process because they're going to order multiple products. But even there, we're seeing a lot of businesses not want to carry a lot of inventory. They want faster turns.
Yeah.
And in Amazon particularly. So Amazon might allow you to ship multiple items to them. Within 5 to 6 months, all of a sudden you're getting back 23 pallets of product that didn't move and they refused to handle it. So now you have to process those. If you're in food, probably 50% are out of date lot code. So you can't even sell them. You have to scrap them or donate them.
Wow.
These are the things you got to think about before you go into it.
Yes, there's so much. And pre-planning can save so much. So Tom, before we get into the second part of your plan, which is analysis, I want to talk about, it's so obvious how important this is. To us, it's obvious. Why don't people do it?
Well, there's two reasons. One, we get into silos. So when we start a business, the first thing people think about is, I need customers.
Yeah.
If I don't keep the customers coming, I don't have a business. So if I'm going to sell a product, some way I've got to get the customer. So the biggest challenge is getting the customer. The second is, how do we manage all the data, like sales order data, purchasing order data, accounts receivable, P&L? Well, we need some kind of software to do that. So that's normally the first step for most companies. They've got to find an ERP or accounting software. It could be QuickBooks to start off with, but QuickBooks can't take you to the large level, so you may have to reintegrate later. But those are the things most people don't do well. They don't think about where they should be. The other part of that, which just totally amazes me, is they might do the analysis of their historical, but they don't do an analysis of their forecast.
Yes.
And if they did the analysis of the forecast, then they know, what do we have to do? Because that volume builds to this level, we may be out of space. How do we manage that? So you want to know that before you actually get there and then say, oh my gosh, we have no place to put inventory. I guess we're going to have to find a 3PL to put inventory there. And that's what happens often.
And that increases costs because now you're beholden to the rent rates, whatever it is that people are going to charge you for the space. And when need is high, price is high.
Well, it amazes me how many companies have C and D products that they have no profit left in them. Because it's been in storage for 3 months. Each, regardless if you own your own storage, there's still a cost to have it on your shelf. And if you don't apply those costs to the product, then you're not running true profit. And 90% of the companies never do that.
Well, actually, if you did, you'd probably be in the rears with many of your products, right?
Well, that's the reason you should scrap or get rid of. I worked with a Bolt company. They have 46,000 SKUs, items, in their inventory, and their A product groups was 1,346.
Wow.
When we looked at the D, it was over 10,000 products. So we just took them off the shelf, put them in a quarter, and sold them for scrap. Cleaned up the warehouse and helped them manage their operation much better. Those are the things you really need to look at, because if you've been around for a long time, you probably have stuff in the warehouse that has collected a lot of dust. If it's dust is on it, you probably aren't selling it.
You know, what strikes me as you're talking, Tom, is the need for a company to have an advisor, a coach, a mentor in this process. Because I mean, I remember looking at inventory and going, well, yes, but if I get rid of it tomorrow, they'll need it. We'll need it, right? And so then you don't dare get rid of it. And there's a point where there's that emotional attachment. There's that a small company worries about every penny. You don't want to buy it again in 3 months. If you have room, it's cheaper to just hold on to it, right? So there's part of that, but there is part of house cleaning you also don't do because your thinking gets muddied. So, I mean, it just strikes me as you're talking, how important somebody like you is to an organization.
Well, and that's the reason I said, instead of being a, instead of being a consultant, we need to be a coach. We need to teach the companies what they need to do, because it should be within internally, how do we manage this? Not somebody coming in and saying, okay, it's time to look at all your D items and see whether or not you sold them in a year or two. And if you haven't, why are you keeping them?
Right.
Why are you keeping them? I mean, all you're doing is wasting space and losing money on them. Clean up your warehouse.
Clean it up. My goodness, it's like your house. It's like everything. A cleanup is a good thing.
Right.
So what have we missed in analysis that is really important? Let's break analysis into two or three categories. If you're in early stage business, mid stage, let's say you've hit 25, 50 million, and then 100 plus million. What's the analysis? It has to be a little bit different in terms of your priorities, or is it?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. So if you take those purchase order, well, transfers could be in there. I mean, there's a bunch that could be in there. But when you look at purchase orders and sales data, that drives your company both ways.
Yep, that's true.
So if you stay focused on those areas and analyze where you are and compare it to what you think where you should be, you'll probably be a success. You know, it surprises me how many companies start off, got great products, and then all of a sudden the trend changes and they're almost out of business because they've never created new products. So when you start seeing that sine wave curve drop on a product, so you should be starting to think about what's the next generation of product we should be getting into. That's all part of the analysis, because it's there for you to see. And a lot of companies don't look at it that way. Now, it may be in a different bucket. It might be a marketing person doing that. But if you know what you're doing and how to do it as a CEO, then you make sure it gets done in the right area. And that's the important part.
What I'm hearing you say, really, if it's those two things that you're looking at, right?
Right.
Your purchase orders and your sales. Is that what the two thing
right.
things that you said? Okay. If those two things are the most important part, and that translates here to what I'm doing with all of my supply chain, the logistics, then the conversation with your sales and marketing team needs to be much more robust than what we tend to have them be. Because they're the ones that hold the key to the future forecast.
Well, yes. And changing trends is really important. I mean, you're not looking in the future. You're not planning ahead. And you don't see a trend occurring, and you modifying to that trend is a death wish. And unfortunately, a lot of companies go through that. E-commerce came, and I can guarantee you the poor retailers are going, wow, we need to get into this because Amazon's kicking our butt, you will. And it isn't the retailer. It's the manufacturer selling through the retailer. They got to work as partners, and they don't. It's like, well, you got the product, now it's yours. Figured out how to get it to your customer. I think it's sad because you're adding cost to cost to cost. How do we keep from adding cost and keep our profit high? I did a study for Cast Iron Skillet Company. And when we analyzed the profit going through Amazon that they were getting, it was about 46%. The minute they delivered it out of manufacturing before packaging, it went to 78%. So they can give Amazon as much profit as they want once they're there. But most companies don't think about that, don't analyze it to see, is this the way we should go or not? So having that data and looking at the historical and the forecast and figuring out where you should go is really extremely important.
You know, Tom, part of that data analysis that you're speaking about is you're weighing as a CEO of a company, where do I invest my money, right?
Right.
Cash is finite. It isn't limitless. So where am I going to invest it? Where am I going to put it? And I think the easy approach is to say, well, if I hand it off to like an Amazon, then I have cut people costs. And that may not be true.
Well, that's a good point, because people cost, you know, production cost, if you will, or picking cost or shipping cost, all of that sort of thing is in the warehouse. So when you're shipping a pallet, that's pretty simple. You just bring a forklift up, grab the pallet, take it to the door, and out onto the truck it goes.
And it's the minute you're shipping.
Good. Yeah, the minute you're shipping a case, now you gotta go and break the pallet, you gotta grab a case, you gotta take it to the shipping, you gotta put it into FedEx or UPS or whoever you're using. And then all of a sudden the customer buys three of those. Now we gotta combine them together. So those are the things that are occurring that if you don't watch what's going on and modify to manage to that is when you're going to be in trouble. And a lot of companies get there because they don't do that. Oh, yeah, well, that's the retailer's problem. Well, the retailer is basically your sales outlet. You want to make it good for them. You want to make it easy. And you want to look at how do I do that? And how do we both make more profit by doing that? Not that, oh, I just handed it off. It's your problem. Now you figure it out.
You know, Tom, we look at the Chinese model right now and are awed in a sense by how they're able to ship sometimes small quantities. Although I remember when China was first starting and I was going to trade shows, China would not ship anything less than a container. You know, you had to commit to their large OEMs and shipments. And then as they realized they had to break it into smaller and smaller quantities, they did that. And then we here applauded that and said, great, look at what I can buy in small quantities. So, but we gave up that authority, that capability to China and thought, well, we can't do that. It's just the only reason we can't is we haven't thought through a process that allows us to do that.
I think the biggest mistake we've made in the United States is offshoring manufacturing, giving away all our technology because the labor rates are low. Instead of how do we do it in the United States and make it efficient so that the labor rate is equal to what we're paying in China, but we're automated it to make ourselves that more cost efficient. Outsourcing, particularly off America, maybe South America would work or Canada would work. But the minute we move it to China, Taiwan, all of those countries, one, we're giving away our knowledge. Two, we're only doing it because of labor rates. And I've walked into warehouses, and once we did the analysis, we were getting 300 to 500% improvement in productivity. So that's a third of the staff.
300 to 500% improved productivity by moving it back in-house.
Right.
Fascinating. We found the same thing with our manufacturing. We did everything in the U.S. because we found that it was actually cheaper to manufacture it here.
And that's why, as a manufacturer, as an owner, you really need to look at how do we service quicker, faster, better, at a lower cost. Because profit is what runs your company. Now, if you can increase your profit from, say, 25 to 45 or 55%, your cash flow is completely different. And most companies don't look at that. So what do we do to become more efficient so that we improve our cash flow and allows us to grow faster, better.
It allows us to grow faster and better. For those of you who are listening to this and you're thinking, you know what, I don't know that I can do this. I don't even know where to begin. Tom, you and I have not spoken about this except sort of in a tangential way. What I would love to know is to hear from you, because one of the things that Tom is very concerned about is how does this knowledge get passed on to other people so we can really be much more vital. I would love to hear from you, know what it is that you're thinking, what you're needing, wanting, because like you, Tom, I'm of the belief that if you want it badly enough, there's a way of creating it. And I think also for those of you who are listening and you think, well, but I can't do this alone. I've got to have a process, a system to bring it together. That's one of the things that we're trying to build right now through our collaborative ecosystems that we're putting together, is bringing together groups of businesses so that you don't have to do it alone. A, it saves you money. B, you've got more resources. C, you've got a whole lot more energy for solving these problems. Thoughts on that?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, when I was living in Northern California, I looked at all the manufacturers in the Oakland area for food products. And I went to a conference and I said, why don't you guys work together? And it was amazing. There were only two or three that said, yeah, we probably should, because we could be a little better with the different volumes. In order to be able to, and this was all on transportation, right? So if we can take our small volumes and get a half a truckload, we just reduced our cost to deliver. But it was difficult for them to figure out how they collaborate amongst each other. And unfortunately, I wasn't really successful in getting that to go forward. Yeah. But it was a thought process. What should you do? Right here. Let's do it.
Let's do it. And it does require a process. It does require a different way of thinking. And so it doesn't happen naturally in our culture. So it needs to be created. But I think it's very creatable. So, yes, it is important. Let's do it. Tom, we have our next area is design. And would you like to, I'm going to just pause right here for a moment. Do you want to continue and do design, or do you want to come back and do this? We've been talking for an hour online.
So I think in the design prong, what you and I should do is probably put some PowerPoints together to kind of say, how do we now design this once we've analyzed it? And I think also, so what should you get when you do the analysis part? What are the things you should be looking for? So when you look at, if we run it on a spreadsheet, it might have as many as 30 tabs. Because did you ever do a matrix of customers, A, B, C, on the left side, products, A, B, C, on the top, and know for your highest profit customer, how much of their highest profit item are they buying and where are they located? Most people don't look at it. So if you do, can we deliver it tomorrow every time? Can we never miss an order? Will we never be out of stock in that location? Those are the things that if they understand how that analysis works, then maybe they can say, oh, this isn't that difficult to do. We should be starting to do this. So I think showing that is really important. I went back to a meeting in Nashville a week ago, and there were five manufacturers in there. When I walked out, three of them came and said, can you teach me how to do the analysis? Even though I showed what it was. So those are the things I think would be good for people to see and examples of them.
I agree. And so we'll do that. And we'll do it in two ways. So those of you who are listening on the podcast can listen to it. We'll put it on YouTube so you can also see it. You'll get it both ways. And so we'll focus on design next on our next podcast. And Tom, thank you so, so much for your time today and your thinking. And I am so looking forward to what can be brought to businesses so they become so much more vital, so much stronger. We need strong businesses in our country.
And thank you, Lois, for doing this because you're great at it. People like myself have no clue where to start. So I appreciate what you're putting together as well.
You are so welcome. Thank you, Tom. And for those of you who are listening to us today on Building My Legacy podcast, thank you for being with us. And remember to visit our website. We have two. One is www.buildtomorrowwiththenumber2.com. And our newest, startwithcollaboration.com. So thank you.
You've been listening to Building My Legacy podcast with Dr. Lois Sonstegard. To book your appointment with Dr. Sonstegard, visit www.buildtomorrow.com.